We're going to go on to case number 6, which is Octavio Delgado versus Arthur Jones. Good morning, Mr. Smokovitz. I hope I did that right.
Smokovitz. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Almost good afternoon, I guess I should say.
Yeah. Been here a long time.
As this panel is well aware, this is the second time this case is before this court. But it is a different case that is now before this court because of the discovery that has occurred subsequent to the remand.
What material difference appeared in the discovery? And I want to emphasize that I think even though you didn't get to it until about page, 30 of your brief, your effort to distinguish between the mere act of writing the report and Officer Delgado's decision as an overall matter to raise with his colleagues in the police department, his colleagues and his superiors, the letter that he received is inconsistent with the way the district court characterized the facts. The district court notes that the thing that Officer Delgado was really focusing on with his discussions with Link, all of which we were discussing before in our earlier opinion, was this overall act of raising this matter within the department. And he's told repeatedly on the way up that if he's silly enough to do that, he's going to be transferred. And then also in our earlier opinion, because all of this appeared in the complaint, we have the information that then Chief Jones, I guess I should call him former Chief Jones, mentioned Delgado by name when he's made aware of this investigation and says, what the heck's Delgado doing looking into this or whatever, words to that effect. So I don't see what of importance comes up because in this deposition, Delgado says, boy, I just would have just as soon not written the report, all of the things that you emphasize so much in your brief. Sure, I mean, once he's made this decision, he's outside the norm and he's in an awkward position, but all of that's in our earlier opinion.
I think the answer is that the distinction arises because in the earlier opinion, it may reflect an appreciation or an assumption by the court because all you have before you at that time are the pleadings.
But we know that it's a procedural matter, but I'm saying it depends what's come up. And the only thing that's come up in the deposition is the fact that, he was reluctant, he was following orders to write up the report, but as Judge Adelman says, just because your superior orders you then to write down what you said doesn't mean it wasn't a communication to begin with. His decision was an overall decision, as our earlier opinion reflects, and the fact that he's ordered to commit it to writing in certain ways later on, and he had various emotional reactions to that, I don't see where that gets us.
The answer, I think, is maybe very simple. It's not a one-step process.
It's an overall process that has component events.
But
once the cat's out of the bag, once he talks to his lieutenant, everything else flows.
But it could have ended right there.
It wasn't up to him.
It wasn't entirely up to him at that point.
How can he silence his lieutenant? How can he tell his lieutenant, don't go to the captain? How can he tell the captain, don't go to the chief?
He can't.
Made the decision to disclose, and that's why that's the decision, which was the one we focused on in our earlier opinion.
He can't tell his superiors what to do about those next steps. I agree or concede that point. But that doesn't mean those superiors would have, as the next steps, communicated anything to then Chief Jones. The communication, the but-for communication, the causal connection, the only thing that gets him before the chief in a position where he's subject to the chief wanting to transfer him, is not added up.
Why did the chief transfer him? Could you tell us the answer to that?
Oh, the chief, you might, I assume,
I want to know why the chief transferred him.
The chief's testimony about this is that he transferred him because, and it's appendix page 119 to our initial brief, the letter, which is why he knows Delgado is involved. Dear Delgado, I have been thinking about why the mayor would call about 815 West Wright Street. Chief Jones says that he is upset that this source of information about drug dealing, about a drug house, and that source being the mayor or the mayor's office, and there's some dispute between the parties about that, but for purposes of this, obviously that dispute's immaterial. The plaintiff says the mayor's office. That the chief, in his opinion, did not think it was appropriate for a vice-controlled detective to be revealing that source of information about a drug house. He did not want him to be in the vice-controlled division anymore. Now,
reveal it to whom? I don't understand that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, what?
To whom did he reveal it improperly?
Oh, to Ms. Mullen, the woman who was running the drug house.
She was the one who revealed it to Delgado.
No.
Yes, that's the letter.
It's not.
She wrote the letter personally to Delgado.
That's right, but the answer to your question is this. The only reason she knew this is that Detective Delgado has admitted that he told her in the course of his interrogation of her. These facts, I assumed, or at least would hope, they're not included in the recitation by the district court or by us, but this is what's known from discovery. Detective Delgado interrogated this woman. He got her ultimately to, apparently, to confess that she was operating this drug house. He says, in his own, if I recall correctly, either statements and or deposition, she was uncooperative. And he used what he thought was a technique to try to get her to cooperate. And the technique was this. We know about your drug house. We know you're running this place. We know all about this because we know it's the mayor or the mayor's office. He makes a point of saying it's the mayor's office. So I'll stand by that. That's why she then writes to him and says, I've been thinking about why the mayor would call about 815 West Wright Street. That's the mayor, that's the chief's motivation here by his own testimony. Now, to be fair, because I want to be fair, obviously I got on a summary judgment motion, I have to assume facts in favor of the plaintiff. The plaintiff says that that's hogwash, that that's not why the chief did it. The chief did it because the mayor, the letter goes on to say that...
I think that's the first time we've ever heard there was any reason, pretextual or otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I guess the answer to that question is this. I never want to be accused of putting a reason into the record that's non-disputed. And so that's the point there. But getting back to Judge Wood's initial question, I think that the discovery here is important because it changes the focus here. He, as a concerned citizen, may have believed that he can take this only so far to his lieutenant and that it would stop there.
But why would he? He's an experienced police officer. He knows once he's put it into the system, and we certainly have to take this as accepted on his version of the facts at this stage, which is, again, no different from earlier, that not only does he know that it's now going to be out of his hands and the higher-ups will do what they see fit, but he also knows from his initial conversation with the lieutenant that he's risking transfer. And he knows that because of the way the practice in this police department operates, the fact that the letter is addressed personally to him will signal to everybody that he's the only person who could have opened it, because they don't open other people's mail. They preserve that amount of confidentiality in the department. So the minute Chief Jones looks at that letter, he knows that it's Delgado. Dear Delgado, he knows Delgado opened the letter. He knows Delgado has to be the one who who brought it up. The lieutenant didn't find it, that it wasn't opened in some by some secretary. It's Delgado.
Yes, that's all true, but...
And we knew all of that before. We know all of this now. So Delgado, the fact that Delgado eventually writes things down, does his matter-of report, just doesn't advance the ball.
But what the court did not know before is that Delgado did not want to go forward with that order, that this was contrary to his desires to expose any of the
beyond his the matter would be investigated, didn't he?
Well,
see, in your
to answer that question, Your Honor, that just simply means that his lieutenant maybe gives it to somebody else, keeps the letter, and it never makes its way to the chief.
You're absolutely correct that his deposition testimony indicated that he investigated the tip and drafted a report on the matter because he was ordered to do so. But I think the problem is that in his statement, he also recognized that the investigation was a matter of public concern, so that you've got him with dual motive for investigating and drafting the report. And don't worry, I'm going to give you some extra time. We've been peppering you. Well,
that's okay. That's what I'm here for. But the motive can and did change here. The motive was,
this is a summary judgment. To go your way, don't we have to find as a matter of law here, there's no public motivation, and Delgado didn't have any discretion about this matter. Now, I don't know how we're going to... That's a pretty big order.
Well, it would be, except for the fact that it comes from Delgado's own words, that
but
he did not write that matter up.
Statement. I mean, Delgado, of course, is following orders eventually, but it requires this, going back to my first point to you, to divide this up in an extraordinarily artificial way. Delgado realized from the very outset that he was opening Pandora's box, and like a normal person, he didn't welcome some of the risk that came along once he realizes this really is going to happen. I have to write the report. It's going to go on up.
Well, but
at least that in the light most favorable to him, a jury might not buy any of that. You might win at this long postponed trial. But at this stage, don't we have to assume that's the way it is?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because I think he wanted it. It's clear. He wanted it to go no further than his involvement wanted to go no further than the lieutenant. He could have. Let's contrast this with a hypothetical or a different scenario. He doesn't go to the lieutenant. He doesn't go to Detective Link. He goes and talks to Margaret Mullins and writes the matter up that goes up to the captain, that's addressed to the captain. If he wanted to, if he had some kind of mixed motive or his motive didn't change or what have you, it could have happened just that way. There's no requirement of going to the lieutenant.
But you see, as soon as you say that, you play right into your opponent's hand, who also say he could have read the letter from Ms. Mullins, thought, boy, this is trouble, thrown it in the wastebasket, and he never would have been transferred.
But I don't think, to answer that question, I don't think that's playing into their hands for this reason. I don't think the court should view this as a one-step process. I think it is a two-step process, because it could have stopped right at the lieutenant's door. The lieutenant could have said, fine, I appreciate the letter, I'm going to send you over to investigate it, come back and tell me what you're going to tell me, and there would have been a letter up to the chief.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Retko, good morning. Good afternoon.
May it please the court. I'm Attorney William Retko, and I represent Detective Delgado, who appears in person this morning. Or actually this afternoon.
You've said that we don't have appellate jurisdiction here because there's an issue of fact. What's the issue of fact?
There is real no issue of fact other than if you buy Mr. Smokowitz's argument that it's determination on whether or not the chief's reason for transferring Detective Delgado was a legitimate reason or not, then you have issues of fact all over the place. And the reason is, Your Honor, the chief claims he transferred Detective Delgado because of a violation of the confidentiality rule. That confidentiality rule says that members of the department cannot disperse information confidential to members of the department to members outside the department. The chief is claiming in a roundabout way that when Ms. Mullins put in her letter to him, that I was wondering why you were thinking, or I was wondering why the mayor's office would complain about my drug house, that somehow or another Detective Delgado divulged the complainant. The complainant in this case was not the mayor's office. The complainant was an individual by the name of Jeanette Campbell. Jeanette Campbell made a complaint to the mayor's office. We have testimony clear throughout the record that indicates that Detective Delgado never once disclosed the name of the complainant to anyone. Chief Jones's only reason that he states for transferring Detective Delgado is a disingenuous reason, not based on any of the facts or the confidentiality rules of the department. Moreover, his own internal affairs division who investigated this complaint, Captain Thompson, came up with a decision prior to Detective Delgado filing the complaint in this case that Detective Delgado, there was no basis to believe he violated the confidentiality rule because no specific names of any individual was given to the arrested letter writer. Subsequently, what happens is about 2 weeks after that memo was written by Captain Thompson, Detective Delgado filed his complaint. 3 weeks or 4 weeks after he files the complaint, somewhere in that time period, the chief orders the commander of the Internal Affairs Division to reinitiate the investigation. Subsequently, 9 months later, they come up with a finding suspending Detective Delgado 5 days without pay for violating the confidentiality rule. Moreover, Your Honor, what's really interesting in this particular case is that Commander Shunk, the head of the Internal Affairs Division, when at his deposition indicated when I asked him why was it that Chief Jones transferred Detective Delgado, his testimony was twofold. One, because the information about Mullins' complaints were not given to him sooner. And number two, because his name happened to be listed in Detective Delgado's matter of. So Chief Jones, former Chief Jones, was upset with Detective Delgado because Detective Delgado not only had the audacity to submit the letter to his lieutenant, which caused the ball to roll down the hill to create further investigation into these allegations, but had the audacity to list Chief Jones's name in that matter of report.
You know, you made an argument a number of times that Detective Delgado could have thrown away the letter. Wouldn't that have violated some police rule? I mean, wouldn't that be illegal to just sort of throw away?
No one would have known the difference, Your Honor, because there was no rule in the Milwaukee Police Department. Detectives have a wide discretion on what to investigate. It's not a finger painting thing or a number painting, it's a mosaic of evidence type of a thing where Detective Delgado gets a complaint. If he foresees that it's something that should be investigated, he investigates. If he doesn't foresee it's something that should be investigated, he doesn't investigate. He could have thrown it away.
So are you saying that letters like this are subject to an initial evaluation by the officer who receives them to see if they in a sense, seem to make any sense, whether they need investigation and they make the call?
Detective Delgado had, yes.
They have that discretion.
Yes, he had that discretion, and if he would have thrown away the letter, no one would have even known he'd received it to begin with. And Ms. Mullins was not in a position to prove she sent the allegations or these letters to Detective Delgado to begin with. He could have thrown away. No one would have been any the wiser of it. He would have never been disciplined for it. And moreover, he knew by initiating the investigation there was a good possibility he would be transferred, but he continued to go forward to initiate the investigation in any event. We don't believe that this appeal is something that this court has jurisdiction over for a number of reasons.
Your jurisdictional argument bothers me in that after the Supreme Court decided Johnson against Jones, it decided Saucier against Cass, and in a sense eliminated these jurisdictional problems with qualified immunity appeals in that they told us step one is to ask what would there be a constitutional violation assuming all of the facts almost in the 12b6 sort of sense or at least in a summary judgment sense, all of the facts favorably to the party who's asserting the violation. If you don't even have a violation at that point, you don't need to bother with anything else. So then, having done that, then you can ask whether the rule of law being argued for, and you sort of elide the question of the disputed facts that disturbed the court in Johnson against Jones, where it was making, I think, the fairly straightforward point that if the law has been violated with version A and not violated with version B, then of course one doesn't decide that on summary judgment. Don't you think we're kind of in a different world now after Saucier on these qualified immunity appeals?
No, Your Honor, and the reason is that step one is the facts of
but
the case.
Taking
and the
them
facts
in,
are
at
the
this point, we would have to take them all in the light most favorable to Detective Delgado, right?
That'd be correct, Your Honor. And by doing that...
That doesn't mean we don't have jurisdiction over the appeal. It just means that we give Detective Delgado every benefit of the doubt.
But, Your Honor, in this particular case, the facts as they came out during the discovery are exactly the same as what was pled in the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
This court has already made a ruling on how those facts apply to the immunity question.
Well, you know, Mr. Retko, I like the rule you're arguing for, but the problem is the Supreme Court in Behrens against Peltier gave people the green light for these repetitive qualified immunity appeals. And I don't see them carving out the situation that you're describing. It's not a good thing to have constant interlocutory appeals on anything, qualified immunity included. But how can we disregard the Supreme Court's Behrens decision?
I'm not asking that this court set aside the Behrens decision or stop there. What I'm asking is that the court consider the facts that the arguments have already been made before this court on the same set of facts.
Well, that we can do.
And to me, Your Honor, the defendant is asking in this particular case is for you to revisit your prior ruling and
well,
say,
that, yeah. But see, that would mean we didn't have jurisdiction. That would mean that we could just say ditto. Right?
And that I'd appreciate if you would do
that. He'll settle for ditto if we can do that, yeah.
If you can do it from the bench, I'd be all the happier. Your Honor, there's nothing new about this appeal that already wasn't decided, and the facts as they came out during the discovery is exactly what's pled in the complaint. The defendant is trying to go to Detective Delgado's motive as the ball is already halfway down the hill. That's missing the point. The point is Detective Delgado's motive was to say this is an important issue that needs to be investigated fairly.
Well, you would agree, would you not, that out of the deposition came a dual motive. One, that this is a matter of great public concern, and two, I was ordered to do this.
True.
Okay.
It was a matter of public concern. He brought it forward to his lieutenant. He was ordered to do it after the fact. Subsequently, though, he had a wide discretion on what he did with the facts he learned in the interview with Mullen. He had wide discretion on how to write his report. He didn't have to include Chief Jones's name in the report, which, according to Commander Shunk, irritated the chief so much that Delgado's going to get transferred. He didn't have to do that. In fact, no one reviewed his notes. He's got pages and pages of notes which have been given to the in discovery to the defendant, and which is part of the record in this case. There were a lot of things that were interviewed and discussed with Ms. Mullen that didn't appear in his matter of. He had a wide discretion on how to write that report. He did that. It wasn't a situation where it's a Gonzalez case where he had no discretion in how to do anything. He was speaking out on a matter of public concern, but yes, getting back to your original point, yes, initially he made a determination this was an important enough matter that should be investigated. It's a matter of public concern that these people in our community have committed these types of crimes and they should be investigated. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Retko. Mr. Smokowitz. We're going to give you an extra 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to address, I think, perhaps one of the last points that Mr. Retko made, and that's about not having to include Chief Jones's name in the report. That's contrary to Detective Delgado's testimony. Detective Delgado's testimony was that he was specifically ordered in being ordered to interview Ms. Mullins and to prepare that report. He was ordered to address that allegation. Those allegations involving Chief Jones. So he didn't have any choice. And I've been continuing to wrestle with...
Did he mention the chief before he was ordered to pursue the matter?
I'm sorry, what, John?
Didn't he mention that the chief's involvement before he was given this order?
Yes.
He bring the matter up initially.
Well, it's in the letter. All he did, when we talked about this communication with the lieutenant, I mean the communication from, the speech from Detective Delgado is, he hands the letter to his lieutenant. And he says to the lieutenant, I think this should be investigated by an outside law enforcement agency. Those are the only communications from Detective Delgado.
Assuming that's right, why aren't they enough?
Well, because...
I mean, how do you get on the track and then get off the track?
Because he wanted to get off the track there. I mean, presuming his allegations are correct about the chief, I mean... He's saying the chief is vindictive, the chief is sensitive, whatever, the chief transfers people. He's going to want to slip that paper basically under the door and say, my fingerprints aren't even on it. It really shouldn't go any further.
That's possible, of course, since it's addressed to him. His fingerprints are inevitably on it.
Well, they're inevitably on it, but to only his lieutenant.
Well, but no, the department knows the department's procedures, that if a letter comes in addressed to Delgado, Delgado opened the letter. It's Delgado who started the letter on its journey through the department.
That's right, but the answer to that is he didn't want that journey to go past the lieutenant's office.
That wasn't up to him at that point.
Correct.
If an associate wrote a memo to a partner at a law firm and the partner decided to give it to the general, you know, managing partner, the associate couldn't stop that from happening.
But that's the point of the change here. The point of the change here is that he wanted to just talk to the intermediate manager, shall we say, and have it go no further, apparently. But he was ordered to write a report addressing this particular issue that had to go to the chief.
I think we've been over this ground. Mr. Smokowitz, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Retko. Of course, the case will be taken under advisement. And the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30. And thanks to all the people in the field who were so quiet and attentive.